Harper Audio presents The Pope's Last Crusade, How an American Jesuit Helped Pope Pius XI's Campaign to Stop Hitler, by Peter Eisner, read by Rick Adamson. It is, on the whole, more convenient to keep history and theology apart. H.G. Wells, A Short History of the World. Prologue. A Settling of Accounts. New York City, May 20th, 1963. The Reverend John Lafarge was fully aware of his place and moment in life. He had dedicated himself to kindness and goodness, to peace and principles. Now, in his final years, at age 83, he recognized that his life was coming full circle. If by chance death comes suddenly and unannounced, and who can be sure that it won't, he had said, it will come as a friend. Our own terminal amen will ring true as the response to the Creator's primal amen, which sent us into this world. He had accomplished a great deal, though there was still a lot left to do. High among the priorities these days was his support for Martin Luther King's upcoming march on Washington. Lafarge had spoken out strongly and frequently about civil rights as fundamental to the promise of America. He was frequently in touch with King and others planning the march, especially his longtime friend Roy Wilkins, the executive director of the NAACP. For half a century, Lafarge had been one of the Catholic Church's clearest voices calling for racial justice. Lafarge had been a young Jesuit priest, working, praying, and living with poor blacks in rural Maryland, and defended their chance to obtain equal education and equal rights. He marveled at their resilience. They were downtrodden, yet they still possessed that great flame of faith, for three centuries had glorified the lives of Maryland's black folk. He knew, however, that without adequate schools, the faith would perish, and the folk themselves would be defrauded of their legitimate development. Lafarge had long wanted the Catholic Church to be a leader in fighting discrimination. Before World War II, Lafarge was a lonely voice among white clergy when he called for an immediate end to racism. In 1936, he had written an influential book, Interracial Justice, which called on churches to lead the fight against racism. Once the light of science is turned upon the theory of race, he wrote, it falls to pieces and is seen to be nothing but a myth. The obliteration of racial injustice and intolerance would continue to be his life's work. He still felt the fire of justice and saw reasons for optimism. Dr. King had been leading a protest movement in Birmingham, Alabama, where 1,100 African-American students had been arrested for civil disobedience against segregation, bravely seeking the simple right to sit at a luncheon counter, to drink from a water fountain, or to read a book in a library. The civil rights movement was maturing. Great leaders had emerged. White men and black men walked together, demanding justice. The end of legalized racism was in sight. The younger Jesuits around Lafarge adored him and noticed with dismay that Uncle John was ailing, haggard at times, and hiding his discomfort as he ambled about the Jesuit community residence at America Magazine on West 108th Street. Sometimes he appeared to be in so much pain that he could hardly take a step at all. Not that Lafarge had pulled back on his schedule. He never complained about physical ailments and always maintained his good humor. He had lived and worked with his Jesuit brethren at the America Magazine headquarters since 1926, rising from associate to the editor of the magazine, and now writing a frequent column. Even today, he came and went, prayed, shared meals, and discussed current events with the others around him. And yet, Uncle John was a distant, mysterious figure. He seemed to carry secrets with him. Perhaps in these final days, Lafarge's determined silence was wavering, and he was ready to unburden himself. Every evening after supper, the Jesuits gathered in the downstairs recreation room, where they chatted and sipped after-dinner drinks. One night, Lafarge began talking about something he had never mentioned. He began by asking if he had ever told them the story of his trip to Europe, the summer before World War II. He knew he hadn't, and all other conversations stopped.